And I thank each and every one of you for having me.
Maggie, a very grateful Allen honor from Parkersburg, West Virginia. Thank you. Anonymity statement. The principle of personal anonymity at the public level is just as important for the relatives and friends of alcoholics as it is for the AA members. At the level of press, radio, and TV, all Al-Anons are anonymous. It is the member's choice how anonymous he or she wishes to be with friends, associates, and others. However, there is much broader meaning in the traditions. They stress principles above personalities to assure us that no one will use Al-Anon for profit, prestige, or power. If the rest of the Al-Anoners are like I am this morning, there's going to be a whole lot of shaking going on up here. This morning we have Alice O.M., Janice F., Marge B., Sherry M. and Esther S., who are here to share experience, strength, and hope as how they came to believe. First will be Alice O.M.
Thank you, Aggie. Good morning, everyone. I am a very... Oh, you beat me to it. I am a grateful recovering member of Al-Anon, and my name is Alice O'Malley. I'm glad you all know. And I'm really very grateful that I know I'm recovering enough to tell you who I am this morning. When I first came to Al-Anon, I couldn't have done it because I didn't honestly know who I was. So I guess I'm making progress. I've grown some. My home group is the Beverly Hills Unity Al-Anon Family Group in Huntington. And I also attend the Wednesday morning Al-Anon group, the Wednesday Westmoreland group, or at least I did attend the Westmoreland Al-Anon group until about a month or 6 weeks ago. I have come back to sponsoring an Alateen group. And believe me, if any of you haven't given consideration to being an Alateen sponsor, please think about it. Our kids need us so desperately, and I can honestly say that you'll receive far more than you give. It's a real growing experience. I do attend a lot of meetings. It's always taken a lot of meetings for me. And I have found that the quality of my serenity is in direct proportion to the quantity of meetings that I attend. So when I find myself getting uptight, getting squirrely, you know, being president of the universe again, taking over everybody's responsibilities, I know that I need more meetings. I've been missing meetings, or I need additional meetings. So I do find that it's important for me to attend a lot of meetings. It always has been, and I guess it always will be. I say I'm a member of Al-Anon because I do attend meetings. I try to work the steps, abide by, and adhere to the traditions and the concepts of our program. I don't feel that I'm a member of Al-Anon simply because my husband happens, by the grace of God, to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. That does not make me a member in good standing of Al-Anon. I'd like to thank the committee, before I forget my manners, for inviting me to be here today. I'm not real sure that I think it's a real favor. I'd much rather be sitting out there with the rest of you all and listening. But I have been told, and I have learned, that if I'm going to grow in this program, I need to do things. So I try now to find reasons to say yes instead of excuses to say no. And it works. I managed to get through with it, and I hope you all will too. I'd like to tell you a little bit about me, just so you'll know that I qualify for this membership. I didn't get here by mistake. I need to be here. I was an only child, and by being an only child, I don't think I was spoiled. If you think of being spoiled as being pampered and indulged. I was given a great deal of love and support from my family, but you know, I developed some really emotional insecurities at a very early age because I can remember worrying about, you know, something happening to my mother and daddy, and I'd be an orphan and I'd have to go to an orphanage. So these things really did start to develop early for me. I've always liked people. I've never wanted to do things by myself. I've wanted a whole bunch of people. And I think this goes back to being an only child. Not only was I an only child, I was the first grandchild. And I don't know whether I imagined it or not, but I felt that there were a lot of expectations of me. And I was, you know, I had to live up to these expectations. So there again, there was a lot of people pleasing developing early in my life. I had to do what you told me you wanted me to do, but worse still, I tried to do what I thought you wanted me to do. And a lot of times you didn't have any idea that this is what I was trying to do, and of course I didn't get the pats on the back, the approval, or the strokes. You know how that leaves you, just totally frustrated. I grew up during the Depression years. My father was fortunate enough that he always had a job, but I'm sure the monthly paycheck was not as much as my mother probably needed to run the house. She'd be a real good manager and stretch that paycheck. We had the basics. I always had a roof over my head and food for my tummy and so forth. But, you know, I really felt that I was deprived because I couldn't have some of the luxuries that my friends had, those material things that I thought were so important. So I think at this point, I started to develop some financial insecurities. Oh, I had a bunch of insecurities when I got to this program. And they didn't come from the alcoholism. They came from my life that I had brought all these things into my marriage. Whether I'd married an alcoholic or not, I was going to have these problems. I can remember thinking we were going to end up in the poorhouse, you know. So, and this was to continue. I did grow up in a religious home. My mother and father were very active, involved members of the church, and I was expected to be too. I believed in God. I didn't doubt that there was a God. You know, he created and managed the universe, but I did not have a real close personal relationship with my God. I was told that he was my heavenly father and I should and ought to love, honor, and obey him. And if I didn't, whatever I had done, my goof was written down in his little book and I'd be zapped for it. I think this was to give me a God of fear instead of a God of love. I'd been in this program a good while before I found a concept that I could live with and have God as my friend. And that's when I discovered that God didn't love me because I was good, but he loved me because he was good. And our relationship could go from there. I also lived in a mother-dominated home. My mother was very subtle about this. She didn't make a big scene about it. Kind of the velvet glove approach. She managed and controlled and directed everything that happened in our family. My daddy may have thought he ruled the roost, but my mother ruled the rooster. This was to be the role model that I was going to carry into my marriage, that, you know, I was responsible for handling everything that happened in my family. I met Gene my junior year in college, and he didn't know. This was during the wartime. You didn't have a lot of time to make up your mind about these things. You know, men were kind of scarce. And I decided that he was going to be my husband and that he was going to make me happy for the rest of my life and we were going to have the perfect marriage. I didn't understand anything about alcoholism at that point. And I didn't know what was going to happen when this insidious disease pervades your marriage. For the next 25 years, we struggled with this problem. Our home was the battleground in the war on alcoholism, and I don't have to tell you all who lost the war. Bob L. at the International in Montreal, I thought, described real well what happens when alcoholism comes into the family. He says, we get a disease called Al-Anonism, which he describes as a neurotic compulsion to stop the drinking of a person who has a neurotic compulsion to drink. Believe me, I was obsessed with this obsession. By the time I got to Al-Anon, you know, I was and I wasn't ready for the program. I knew he needed help. He was sick and boy, he needed help. But thank you, I was fine. I was perfectly all right. If you people would just give me that magic wand that I could wave over him, you know, and take care of the situation, get him to straighten up his act, we'd get back to having that perfect marriage. That was the only thing that was wrong in our life. 13 years in this program, I can stand here today and tell you I needed Al-Anon. Probably more so than he needed AA. I've come to believe that there was not a question in my mind but what I needed this program. Kind of brings me up to our topic this morning. This beautiful spiritual concept of hope that's expressed in our second step didn't evolve for me overnight. It was a slow process. It took three stages that I had to go through for this to develop for me. It had to be came to, and came to believe. It was out of complete desperation, you know, being wiped out, washed up, whatever, bankrupt in all three areas of my life, when I finally decided to surrender. And I think it was through that total surrender and divine guidance that I got to the program of Al-Anon, because one bleak January day, I was sitting at my kitchen table and I couldn't honestly make a decision as to whether or not to put dishes in the dishwasher, whether to go upstairs and make beds, or whether to sit there and cry for another 2 hours. I think at that point, I uttered that humble prayer and asked God to please help me. Nobody else, just me. No bargains. The complete surrender that I think we have to really get this program. You know, at that moment, it was like a light bulb came on. That precise moment that I remembered having read an Ann Landers column, oh, a long time ago, that talked about a group that helped children cope with problems and when there was alcoholism in the family. And even in my confused mind at that point, I thought, well, you know, if there's something for kids, there must be something for spouses that tell them how to get their husband sober. So I reached for the phone, and it was because of that call that I came to Al-Anon. After attending many meetings, we were in the Washington area at the time, and I was fortunate. You know, you didn't have just one or two meetings a week. You could go to two or three meetings a day if you chose to. And I had a sponsor who encouraged me to get to a lot of meetings. But I think with a lot of meetings and a lot of acceptance and love, I was able to start to come to from the confusion that had literally anesthetized me. And I kind of started to wake up spiritually. And it was with the loving acceptance and endless sharing, and as I say, a very patient sponsor, but a very tough sponsor, that I was able to begin to come to believe and trust that the God that I didn't always understand, but thank goodness understood me, could help me get my life back to order, could establish some wholeness and some meaningfulness in my life. When I did arrive at the doors of Al-Anon, figuratively, my life was in a box. It was a box filled with a million jagged, broken pieces, a real unsolvable, hopelessly unsolvable puzzle. I had lost all my energy and all my inclination to even want to try to put that puzzle back together. If it had a title on the box, the title probably would have been Misery. Didn't have a picture to guide me. I guess the picture had long disappeared. And I knew in my mind's eye probably that it was going to be so doggone ugly that I didn't even want to look at it. And worse still, I certainly didn't want any of you all to see it, because I knew that, you know, you'd just think I'd made a terrible mess of my life. Of course, this is when I realized that ego and pride had to be worked on before I could make any progress in this program. But with the love and the support, I was encouraged to start putting the pieces together, one piece at a time. I think at this time, I really had a slight glimmer that maybe the picture God had designed for my life, this might have a touch of beauty in it after all. So I was encouraged to keep on working on my puzzle. There were days when I couldn't find a single piece that would fit in. Maybe I'd been looking right at it and couldn't recognize it. You know, if our attitudes are lousy, nothing's going to go together in our life. Nothing's going to fit together. So I would have to work on attitudes. I've always been a real impulsive person, one of these people that wanted to hurry up and get through with everything. When I started with the steps, you know, it was bang, 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 go all the way through the 12 steps. But that's when I found out there was a 13th step. That's the one you turn around on and go back and start all over. But I was told in this program that I didn't have to rush. I could take all the time I needed, that I could just relax. The only thing was that I needed to stay willing to search for the missing pieces. So when I think, when you see a little corner of your life coming together, it does a lot to dispel the hopelessness that you've been living with for so long. I was told that I could ask for help, that you people were standing by and you'd be willing to help me work on my puzzle. And you know, it's great when two people or three people are working on it, you find the pieces a lot faster and a lot easier. And also, you know, the task becomes fun. There's nothing like sharing the joy of discovery. It really enhances it. I found also that the Al-Anon program is the glue that's going to hold my life together. So the days when I, you know, knock my puzzle on the floor, the whole thing scatters, you know, it all falls apart, I know that I can pick it up and start all over again. That's okay. And that's when the glue of the program starts being applied, because I don't want to have to do that more than once. You know, I'm supposed to learn from those mistakes. The big thing I think I learned was that all those millions of pieces that were in my box weren't going to fit in my puzzle. You know, they belonged in other people's puzzles. It was a real relief and a lightened load when I could give them back where they belonged and to find out that it wasn't my job to solve their puzzles. My puzzle isn't finished. I don't guess it will be in my lifetime. And I found that it's subject to change. The picture that I think it's going to look like when I get a few pieces together sometimes changes considerably when I put a few more pieces in. And that's okay. I don't have to be afraid of change like I was before. I have come to believe that the God of my understanding is doing for me what I could not do for myself. He is rescuing me. Well, he has rescued me when he got me to you people. And he's trying to restore me to a measure of sanity where I can live a rational life and be happy with my life. And I thank each and every one of you for helping him to help me. I love y'all.
Thank you, Alice. Thank you for loving me as I am. Barbara B. will read the steps, and Eleanor W. will read the traditions.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. I'm Barbara. The 12 steps. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Good morning, everybody. I am Eleanor W., a grateful member of Tuesday Night Al-Anon in Parkersburg, West Virginia. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal progress for the greatest number depends upon unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the relatives of alcoholics, when gathered together for mutual aid, may call themselves an Al-Anon family group, provided that, as a group, they have no other affiliation. The only requirement for membership is that there be a problem of alcoholism in a relative or a friend. 4, for each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting another group or Al-Anon or AA as a whole. 5, each Al-Anon family group has but one purpose, to help families of alcoholics. We do this by practicing the 12 steps of AA ourselves, by encouraging and understanding our alcoholic relatives, and by welcoming and giving comfort to families of alcoholics. 6, our Al-Anon family groups ought never endorse, finance, or lend our name to any outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary spiritual aim. Although a separate entity, we should always cooperate with Alcoholics Anonymous. 7, our groups ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Al-Anon 12-step work should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, our groups as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, the Al-Anon family groups have no opinion on outside issues, hence our name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, TV, and films. We need guard with special care the anonymity of all AA members. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles above personalities.
I have to adjust this a little bit, I'm sure. Hi, everybody. My name's Janice Ford, and I'm from the Monday Night Al-Anon group in Fairmont. And I know Alice is a hard one to follow, but I'm going to do the best with what I've got to do with. And I don't know whether to thank Esther for asking me to do this or not. She's avoided me ever since she asked me. In my youth, I had a fearing God. My parents always saw that we went to church. I had 2 brothers and 2 sisters, and we always went to church. I can't say that my parents took me to church. They sent me. And that's neither here nor there today. But this God that I had back then was a fearing God, and it was, if you don't do this, God will punish you. And so in later years, I put that God up on the shelf, and he was to remain there for many years because I didn't go to church after I got married and had my children. I didn't go to church, and I'm sorry to say that today. But in 1954, there was a tragedy that came into my home. My son was burnt very badly, and he was to spend the next 2 years in the hospitals, one in Fairmont and one in Charleston. But the good Lord was good to us. He spared that child. And at that time then, I began to seek a church and a God that I could understand, a God that would love me, not punish me. So in 1957, I became a child of that God that I understood and understand today. But you see, I was never honest with that God like I've been with you people now and on. And in 1968, I have to have dates because I do ramble, and that's the reason I have my dates down. I bought my home, and at this time, my children had grown up, and they left the roost. And mother was left at home with the problem of alcoholism, and it became a member of my family along with my spouse. And I was angry at alcohol because it was domineering my entire life. And I say this about buying the home. I had a small business that I had to go into in 1945 and able to survive because I was the only working person in the home. And thank God, next month I will celebrate 40 years of business of operating this little grocery store. So if you think God hasn't been good to me, you're wrong. He has been good to me. And after the children left home, as I say, alcohol did become a problem. It was there all along, but the children were there, and I spent time with them, and I spent time with this God that I was understanding today. And if you were to look for me, and I wasn't at home, you bet your bottom dollar I was in the house of the Lord, because that's the only place that I ever went. And I don't say that with bragging. It was just that was where I was at. We didn't have a car. I guess we would go down in Guinness Book of Records as the only family that never owned an automobile. And we still don't own one. And thank God we do have some good Al-Anon friends that takes us whenever you say you want to go. They say when and what time, and I'll be there. But in 1971, my family saw that alcoholism was ruining my marriage, and they didn't want me back home. So my brother and his wife, God bless her, saw that we got to an alcohol and drug abuse center and went in for counseling. And they told me I didn't belong there, that there was a group called Al-Anon that was meeting at the church where we have our meetings on Monday night. So I went to that first meeting, and they told me that night that they loved me. You know, nobody had told me that for years. And I went back because I liked that. I wanted to be loved. And so I have been going now for 14 years. And they told me to get a sponsor. And my sponsor's in this meeting today. And my co-sponsor's here too, because without her, I wouldn't have got here. So I want to thank her and Francis and Eleanor both for the help they've given me, and all the members of my Al-Anon group there in Fairmont. But as I say, I got to the Al-Anon program through the Alcohol and Drug Abuse Center, and with a shove from my family. And I came through those doors, and they gave me a God that I would understand me today. They give me back self-worth. They give me back respect. They give me back the urge to be able to be a human being again. Because I didn't think that my life was unmanageable. I had done well. I had raised two children. They had neither one ever been in trouble that I knew of. Today I know they both drank back those days, but I didn't know it. And kind of dumb, wasn't I? But I was working all the time, see. But then when I got the store in my home, I could see where my husband was doing quite a bit of drinking, and that's when the problem occurred to me that there was, you know, something to be done about it. But anyhow, I got to Al-Anon. I had two dresses to my name, and that is the truth. I had one somebody had given me and one that I had bought. And a girl said to me about the third or fourth meeting when I got there, she said, "You have a beautiful dress on." And I went home and stood in front of the mirror and I looked at that dress. And I thought, she doesn't know I don't have only two. But then I began to where I would go to the stores and I would charge something once in a while. I didn't do this before. People came to me and would ask for credit, and I trusted those people. But I didn't think anybody would trust me. But they did. And I did find a God of my understanding, and my life has become a little more manageable. And I'd like to say, I do know I've improved. I haven't lost my meal ticket one time this weekend. And I promised the girls I'd save them some time so they could talk. So I'm going to turn it over and let Marge tell us how she came to believe. And thank you all for listening to me. I love you.
Hello, everybody. My name is Marge B. I'm a member of the Sunday Night Clarksburg group and a very grateful recovering Al-Anon. This is my first Al-Anon conference, and I was so excited about coming here. I had never been to one, and I thought, gee, I'd heard so much about it. They're fun, relaxing, and I was really looking forward to it. And then the bomb dropped. Esther said, "Would you talk?" And I said, "Sure." She said, "Just say something about Come to Believe." And I thought, that's a long way away. You know, I'll put it aside like I did everything, forgot about it. But here I am, and big resentment against Esther, and I'll be glad to get this over with so I can get that over with. I was born into an Irish Catholic family. My dad had been in the seminary, and he knew all about God, or so I thought. I was the youngest of three children and the only girl. The God of my understanding was a loving and just God, but my dad always said, you don't have to pay too much attention to what they tell you at church, because he knew all about the people that had gone through the seminary, and they didn't really know what they were talking about. So my God was kind of an institutional God. I went to church. I had all the external appearances of someone that believed, and so did my family. I grew up as the peacemaker in the family. My brothers were older. They fought all the time. They fought with my parents, and I was the one who settled all the disputes. I got them back together again and patched things up and very quickly assumed this role. I also developed feelings that I had to make things up to people. So I would go out, even as early as grade school, I'd bring kids home and I'd say to my mother and dad, you know, they really are having a hard time. Can't they stay with us for a couple days, a week, or a month? And they did. Mother and dad always said yes. This went on through grade school into high school. People who grew up in an orphanage, I'd bring them home for a month or two and they'd stay with us. I just had this idea that I could solve other people's problems, and our family was really, you know, a good family. We didn't have any problems. What I failed to look at is that my dad was a party drinker. He didn't really drink at home, but when he went out, he knew how to have a good time. And he came home drunk. And my mother was a nag. She nagged from morning till evening. And I swore that I would never, never do this when I met someone and got married. I went to school, and my senior year in college, I met my husband-to-be. I had never met anyone like him. It was love at first sight. He could drink more than anyone I had ever known. He was in the JAG Corps, and I was in Washington, D.C., and he took me to all the bases, and drinks were 15 cents, so you could really drink a lot. There I met the martini. I had never been much of a drinker, and his love and passion was Manhattan's, and we certainly had a good time. We moved to Charleston, West Virginia. I'd never been to West Virginia, never heard of it before that, and I thought down the middle of nowhere, you know, how do you get in and out of this place? There's nothing but big hills and this narrow little valley. And I went to work at a psychiatric hospital there. And they used to bring these drunks in, and I thought, my goodness, you know, couldn't believe these people were in such bad shape, and you'd treat them, and out they'd go, and I'd thank God that I didn't have any problems like that in my home. Well, we had three children in 4 years, so I stuck pretty close to home during those years. My husband began drinking a great deal, and I refused to deal with this or look at it. I just thought that for some reason he was having problems and it was my fault and I needed to be nicer and kinder and try to help him solve it. Of course, you all know that doesn't work. But the drinking continued, and it went from bad to worse. And we moved to Clarksburg. I took a job, and the job became my whole life. I loved my work, and I was working with students and really enjoyed hearing about their problems and helping them solve them, because then I didn't have to face my own. The drinking continued. I could not discuss this with anyone, not any friend, no one from work, not my husband's parents or my own parents. I didn't think anybody knew about it. Pat and I talked about it all the time. He'd say, do you think I have a problem drinking? And I'd say, no, you don't have a problem drinking. You don't drink too much. Because I knew if I denied it, it wasn't there and I didn't have to face it. It continued getting worse, and my children were older by then, and finally they kept saying, "Mom, you've got to do something about this. You know, it's terrible. Dad's drinking all the time." And people would ask me, "You know, does your husband have a problem drinking?" And I'd say, "No, of course not. He's just having some problems. He's sad, whatever." That was really how I dealt with problems. The more he drank, the sadder I became, the madder I became, and the rage I just kept inside me. Finally, someone told me I needed to go to Al-Anon. I immediately went out and got all the books I could find on alcoholism. I solved all my problems by intellectualizing them, read about it, knew all about it. And I learned there were 132 different kinds of drunks and tried to find out which kind of drunk he was. I finally told Pat I was going to an Al-Anon meeting, and he said, "Well, there was no reason to, but if I insisted, don't go in Clarksburg." So I drove to Morgantown. I told him there that there weren't any meetings in Clarksburg, and that's why I was there. That was about an hour's drive, so they suggested I might try Fairmont. They knew they had some meetings there. So I went to Fairmont for a couple of months, and I was really slow to catch on. I think I'm a slow learner. I really stuff things in there and hide my head in the sand and don't like to face problems. I had built such high walls that I had no emotions, and my head was really detached from my body, so I couldn't feel anything. When I got to Fairmont, they really took me in, and I think they saw a sad case and had me listen to tape after tape on steps and leads and meetings and everything else. My husband, in the meantime, continued his drinking, and I felt myself detaching. I knew it was beyond my hope. One night we were going to, he always drank at home. You know, I knew it was going to start, the creak of the cupboard door, the Western music would come on, Grand Old Opry, and there it'd be for the rest of the night. This one night we were going out to a party, and I still really hadn't faced the problem, even though I'd been in Al-Anon for 4 months. We were going down the interstate, and you know, after so much drinking, you have to get loaded before you go out. So I said, "I think you've had too much to drink. Why don't you let me drive?" And he said, "Oh, I haven't." He said, "Watch this," you know, as we cut in front of a car and then in front of a truck. And I thought, this man's crazy. And then I thought, no, he's drunk. I'm crazy for sitting in this car. And I think it was at that point that my head and heart came together, and I realized that there was no way I could control the drinking, that I was the one that was insane, and I had to seek help. I had to really get down on my knees and ask my higher power to guide me. It was after that that I came to realize, or came to believe, that the God of my understanding is in you all. It began to take on some meaning that you see God or Christ in others. And as I looked at each of you and really began to hear what you were saying and see the serenity in your faces and the love that you showed me, that I found the God of my understanding, and that I came to believe that God works through people, and the people for me that he was working through were the Al-Anons and the AA members. I came to believe that in weakness there is strength, in despair, hope, and that through this program I could recover, that you all were really the reflection of the God of my understanding. I know now that my husband is living with a recovering Al-Anon, that indeed I am probably as sick or sicker than he ever was. So I am grateful to Esther for asking me and glad to be here. Thank you.
I'm grateful, too, to be here. That is my reason, because Al-Anon has given me a God of my understanding, and I've come to believe. It didn't happen overnight. I'm not going to talk about my childhood. I'm going to talk about my growth in Al-Anon. It started 4 years ago, right here. It was after the conference in August of 1981, and I hadn't been quite in Al-Anon for a year, when the leads and several things came together for me, right here. And my spiritual awakening happened after I arrived home. I had hoped it would happen here because my sponsor at that time had experienced her first awakening right here at this conference the year before. And I was kind of hoping to be that it would be like that for me. I had used my intellect, my stubbornness, my willfulness for years to try to change this person in my life that I was obsessed with. I thought he was to make me happy, and if he would do what I wanted him to do, if he loved me, you know, everything would be okay. And it took quite a few years, about 15, for me to finally realize, you know, that he couldn't. But like I said, after I got home, I had a spiritual awakening. And what it was for me was that there was two people inside of me. There was this person who wanted to be godlike, but is also being human, who wanted to hold on to her old way of doing things. And I was full of a lot of fear of what I could be. I didn't have the crutch. I had come to the program and I was learning. I was letting go of the alcoholic in my life. He had even managed to find sobriety without my help. That was something to chew, I'll tell you. But anyway, I had accepted the first part of the first step, that I was powerless over the alcoholic when I came through the doors, the Al-Anon doors again in the fall of 1980. But I would not admit that my life was unmanageable. I was trying to use my intellect, and I was using the program. I was working a program. But it was my program. It wasn't Al-Anon. And anyway, I had a spiritual awakening outside the steps of the church where we met. A group met on Sunday night. And I was with my sponsor at that time. And I was crying. I was in a lot of pain. And she told me, she said, where else? Because I didn't want to go into the meeting. And she said, where else do you belong? And I knew she was right. And so I humbled myself. And I went into that meeting and I told them who I was, where I was, and what was happening to me. And the people told me afterwards to keep coming back, to hang in there, keep coming back. And I'm grateful that I did. This disease is threefold. I think at that time I really, emotionally, I had physically in the fall of 1980 come through the doors, but emotionally I was beginning to come into Al-Anon. This past winter, through a lot of pain, I finally surrendered spiritually.
I have been involved in service in Al-Anon. I was working the steps. I was working the traditions. My home life was improving. The son that I had abused physically and verbally, we were closer than we'd ever been. When he was 2 years ago, when we went away for our first vacation, it was the first time I'd heard him tell me that he loved me. It's because of Al-Anon. But this past winter, I was facing a big change in my life. And if it hadn't have been for the love and the concern of the people in Al-Anon, in the Parkersburg area, where I attend meetings, I don't know what I'd have done. But I turned to a God of my understanding, and I finally surrendered. And in that surrender, admitting my weakness, I found my strength. And that strength for me was God, a higher power, a power greater than me. Because I had lost, prior to coming to Al-Anon, I had lost this conscious contact with a God. I had been brought up in a very strict home, and I rebelled a lot. I was made to go to church. My parents took me to church. My father was a song leader in the church. I had a brother who became a minister, and I rebelled. And I was the black sheep. But I could not relate to the God that they understood. And it was through Al-Anon that I found a loving God, that he holds me and he guides me when I turn my life and my will over to him. I'm really grateful. There's been a lot of changes, a lot of growth. The fact that I'm up here, as some of my friends know, that's a lot. But I know that God keeps giving me opportunities to grow, and that if I don't say yes to those things, I'm not a winner. If I don't say yes to the opportunities, I'm not a winner. And I want to be a winner because I'm a miracle. It's a miracle I'm alive, and I'm grateful. Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Esther Sebastian. I am a member of the Central West Virginia Al-Anon group that meets on Sunday night in Coresburg, West Virginia.
Hi.
My anniversary date for Al-Anon is March 29, 1969. You can tell it's taken a long time for me to get better. I'm not well enough to do it without notes yet. I've had an awful time with this came to believe. The last few weeks, I would have thoughts that were beautiful that I wanted to share with you, and I'd have it down, and 5 minutes later, I couldn't remember what the thoughts were. And I was like this up till yesterday afternoon, and I went over to the chapel. I thought, well, I'd made notes that you couldn't even read. I couldn't read them. And I went over to the chapel. I thought, well, I'll sit in the back and jot down what I wanted to say. And I knew who the girl was that came in, and I explained to her what I was doing and how my mind just wasn't functioning. I had had a lot of pressure at work lately, and I'd had the registration here, and my brain was not, I thought I had Alzheimer's disease there for a while. And she said, that's good. And I said, what do you mean that's good? You know, my brain just isn't working. She said, well, God has given you a clean blackboard, and I want to thank her for that. Because I left that chapel, and until I came in here, I never thought again about getting up here. And I thank my higher power for that. I am the wife of an alcoholic, admitted alcoholic, who is recovering in AA. I'm the mother of a son who has almost a year and a half sobriety now. He's an alcoholic and drug addict. And each day of my life, I thank God for the sobriety of these two people. They are miracles. I have always believed in a God as far back as I can remember. Now, my parents were not church people as such. My mother took us. Most of the thoughts that I learned about God were from my grandmother. And she taught us that you didn't do anything on Sunday. Never figured out how you were supposed to take care of kids and not work on Sunday. But she taught us that if you sew on Sunday, when you get to heaven, you're going to take the stitches out with your nose. I'm sure some of you had teachings like that. That I was really scared of God. Now, I did a lot of comparing when I was growing up because I had no self-confidence. I feared people, and I still have a fear of people until I get myself out of the way. See, I'm so afraid that I'll do something wrong. And I know in this program it doesn't matter. You love me anyhow. But I did a lot of comparing. You know, if I was as smart as they were, I could do what they were doing. If I was as pretty as they were, if I was as small, if I was as outgoing, I never accepted the gifts that God had given me and used them. I always compared, if only I had. I bargained with God in the alcoholic days. When my husband was out drinking, I'd say, God, you get him home and I'll get out of this situation and never have to ask you for this favor again. I never got out of the situation. I didn't really know how to get out of the situation. I certainly didn't have the courage to. I've never had the courage to do anything that I shouldn't have. The only thing I ever did that my parents really didn't want me to was marry the alcoholic. And for this reason, I thought that God was punishing me, that this alcoholic had been put in my life, that was my cross to bear. You know, I never once looked at what this man was going through in his alcoholism. I will be forever grateful that God did give me the insight to see towards the last, before he sought help, that he was drinking because he had to, not because he wanted to. And I am grateful for that. I always thought that God really didn't want me to enjoy life for some reason or other. And that's why I had all these things in my life. My husband had been sober 7 years when I came to the Al-Anon program. And I know that God had a hand in my coming here. I didn't think I needed help. You know, I got these three kids off to school every morning, and I worked and held down a full-time job, and I really didn't need, you know, I was managing very well. But I attended conferences out of state, and I saw Al-Anons, and they had something I wanted. I was living with a man who was recovering, and I wasn't going nowhere. See, for years I knew that God loved me, but I always thought he loved you better. And I think that's why I did so much comparing, that he'd given these other people so much more. I came to this program to help others because there were people still living with the active problem, you know, and I thought, well, I'd be big and I didn't have problems in my house, so I could come and help other people. I've stayed because I need help. Some of the things that I have come to believe since coming to this program, you know, I didn't come in here and God wrote on the wall, or there wasn't a bolt of lightning came down. The growth and the belief has come slowly, and it has come through other people, through the miracles that I have seen worked in people's lives in both fellowships. About a year after I had come to the program, I went through a cancer operation. And if anyone has gone through that, you know the fear, especially at first. If you get a headache, you just know that the cancer has come back. And I made up my mind within a few months I could not live whatever time I had left going through this. And I also had heard an AA speaker that says, how much time do you have to do the things that you want to do? and that kept going over and over in my mind. And I feel that this was an adversity. See, that's been 15 years ago. That God put in my life, because at that time I made a commitment to the Al-Anon program. And I've been active in service since, and it has become my way of life. I didn't just come in here, though, and say, here I am, God, you know, work your miracles. I had to have an open mind. I had to listen to what other people said. I had to let go of some opinions that I'd had all my life. Some of the things that I have come to believe in this fellowship are the principles that are set down in our 12 steps. Think about them. Love, honesty, and the big one for me has been courage, because I was, fear can rule my life yet. There's been days in the last year and a half with our son that I am just overcome with fear, because I know that either one of the addicts in my family can go back to drinking or drugging. And there's been days, you know, I think in new sobriety you have a tendency to do that, and the fear. And I can honestly say that if I stop and turn it over to God, that fear is gone. And he has gotten me through many nights, and that my mind was just occupied with him. And I came to realize, I think through this son's addiction, my powerlessness over the disease of alcohol far more than I ever had with my husband's. Because there was absolutely nothing I could do. This boy wasn't living at home. He was of age. And there was absolutely nothing I could do. So I look at his sobriety as a gift from God. Now, it's not my gift. It's the alcoholic's gift. And whatever he does with it. And this is what I try to keep in mind with my son. You know, whatever he does with this gift, it is his. He lived with us for a year after he came out of treatment. And he let us share in this gift of alcoholism. We came to know this boy again. And I'm grateful. I believe in the healing power of the fourth and fifth step of our program. If you haven't worked them, try them. I believe that our Al-Anon program will do just what it says it will do. It'll give you comfort, understanding, serenity, and a lot of good friends. That's one of the rewards. I believe that by surrendering, I win. That by giving away, I keep a lot. I believe that any time that I pray about a problem, that either the problem goes away or is solved, or I am changed in it when I truly give the problem to God. And this has worked. I heard a phrase not long ago. Somebody said something about God's tender mercies, that they thank God each night for his tender mercies. And I like that phrase. And since I've heard it, I've thought of all the tender mercies my higher power has given me. He's given me a sponsor, and I thank God for her. He's given me two sober people in my family. He's given me a people in a home group that there's a closeness, and there's many of them I know said prayers for me this morning. I thank you. He's given me people at conferences like this, and my husband and I have had the privilege of attending a good many conferences over the last few years. And he has given me, like I said, the people at these conferences, because this is where I see God through you. Something that is said that changes my life in the days to come. I believe that I have just scratched the surface of the power that are in these 12 steps. I wonder if sometimes you stop to think the power you have in your life if you follow this program. Because you do. I believe that God loves me, and I believe that he loves you, and so do I. And I hope that he keeps you in his tender mercies all the days of your life. Thank you.
On the behalf of the conference, we thank you. I give you Esther, our conference chairman.
Do you expect me to talk? My name is Esther, and I'm very grateful for Recovering Al-Anon. Hi, everybody. Once again, it is time to close our conference. It has been a hectic year, and yet it has been an extremely rewarding year. I thank you for the opportunity that you have given me to serve Al-Anon and to show my gratitude to this program and to you people and to the God of my understanding. I would like to thank personally, in a very special way, the 1985 Conference Committee. They have helped me to realize that together we can do what I can't do alone. Our total this year was 397. And I'd like to give you the breakdown by states. New York, 1. Thank you, Helen. Virginia, 1. Florida, 2. Georgia, 4. Maryland, 17. Keep coming back. Ohio, 84. Here we go again. West Virginia, 138. I think Pennsylvanians love West Virginia, you know? Pennsylvania, 150. Before I introduce your 1986 conference chairman, I'd like to share briefly what an AA member said to me Friday evening before I had to approach this podium to open the conference. He said, "You know, God hasn't brought you this far to drop you off." I give you Sherry M. from Belpre, Ohio.
The good news is we're coming back next year. Yesterday I was able to finalize a date, and it will be in August again, the 8th, 9th, and 10th of August, 1986. And I hope you all come back and bring someone with you. Pass the word. Pass it all along. Now I guess we close with the... Oh, okay, we got...
The tapes for the panel this morning will be ready after lunch in Kanawha County. And I want to thank each of you in a very special way for loving me. Okay? Will you help me close our conference with the Lord's Prayer?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive our trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory.